We started last week a study of two ways of living. We can either live by the flesh or by the Spirit. And we're taking our text from Galatians 5, 13 through 26. I hope each week you will read over that, because it's going to be real easy to lose sight of the thing as a whole, since especially as we're studying these words. And we want to keep in context that we're studying which way do we want to live and what those two ways are, because there are people who think they are living godly lives, say they believe in God, but can be living in adultery and practicing immoral sexual relations their whole life and think they're just perfectly fine. So we have to understand what this is. Sometimes, and I'm afraid even members of the Lord's body, as we're going to look at some of the other words, the uncleanness and those kind of things, we're involved in those things and don't even think about it because of the movies we watch, the kind of jokes we listen to and think are funny. And so we're wanting to do this to examine our lives, but also to be able to teach our children and our grandchildren and have an influence in their lives. But also, as we go through these, we want to remember that we can be involved in this. This can happen to us. Okay, we stopped on, and I've got the numbering is off, but I have it, is it B under 2? No, 1. Under immorality. And we were discussing, and I had asked you to give examples from Scripture of fornication and show the impact that it had on those who committed fornication and the impact that it had on others. And we had discussed David and Bathsheba. And Lauren mentioned Amnon, and I had put that all in with this. But, and of course, it was rape, not actually fornication, because it wasn't a consensual thing. But there was a lot of, even when there's a rape, there are fallout. There are people who are hurt. And
it was fornication on his part.
Yes.
The reason I put it was because of the impact it had on other lives.
That's right. And it had a great impact on her life. We never read where she ever married. And it had an impact on Absalom because it made him so mad, he wound up killing his brother. And so this is a sin that permeates. Everybody likes to say, it's my life and I can live it. I'm not wanting anybody else to be affected or hurt, or I just want to do I want to do my thing. And it doesn't work that way. Okay, does anybody else, or we have some other instances of fornication and the impact that it had on the person or others?
Well, before we leave David, you talk about Absalom, killing Amnon. Well, Absalom then, in trying to take over his father's throne, was he the concubines?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we listed that. I think I listed that last week. Were you here last week?
No.
Okay. Yeah, we talked about that last week. There was a whole...
Well,
where I listed that was under David and Bathsheba. That was David. We talked about God said the sword would never depart from David's house. And so because of his fornication with Bathsheba, we listed the whole host of things, and that was one of them, was that Absalom raped his concubines before the whole nation, and how that not only affected them, but it affected the whole nation. How did the nation feel when all of that was going on?
I put Lot and his daughters.
Yes. Okay.
The Ammonites and the Moabites always seem to be hated by God.
Mm-hmm. And how much of that affected Lot when he realized what had happened? How does a father feel when he realizes he's having children by his daughters?
Because it says, that it grieves his heart, and it just, the scene there in Sodom and Gomorrah, it was just, it just pressed on him so. And then to turn around and to have the only two people that were coming out of Sodom and Gomorrah with him to do this horrendous especially under law today.
Okay, anybody else have another? Sandra?
I also had Dinah when she was raped. The thing that I see in that is righteous anger turned into unrighteous anger. And so that's an effect of that.
Right. I didn't think about her.
I put Exodus 32. It's when the nation of Israel did the golden calf and they rose up to play. And that, you know, if you studied that and looked into that, it seems to be that there was immoral acts to the golden calf. And as a result, the Levites went through the camp and killed. Let's see, I wrote it down. Exodus 32. I mean, you know, they went against God, and it says it was evil, and then the Levites went through the camp, and that's, you know, of course, Moses had said, you know, don't blot out Israel. He stands between Israel and God, and he says, the man who sins, you know, I will punish. Verse 33, and I will block him out of my book. And but up above there, in 28, Levi did as Moses instructed. About 3,000 men of the people fell that day.
Okay, I'll have to take your word for it. I've never studied that. I don't know if that's an indication of idolatry was such an odious thing to God, and so I don't know. I've never heard that before. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I've never studied that and never heard that before. So I have no idea.
I'm at 1 Corinthians 5, where two people have actually, you know, impacted not only them and their family, but the entire church.
Okay, very good. And that caused Paul to write a pretty pointed letter to them. And another thing that was interesting about that came to my mind was that Paul wrote that letter on a report. It wasn't, he wasn't there. Someone had told him what was going on. And so, but that's a pretty big effect when a letter, a portion of a letter is written because of fornication. Okay, anybody else? I thought of John the Baptist. Because, and I guess that was more adultery than fornication, but it caused him to lose his head. The immoral sexuality of Herod, it was because John the Baptist had said, you've got your brother's wife, and he, you know, that's got him thrown in jail, and then she finally found a way for it to cause Herod to do something he didn't want to do, and cause John the Baptist to lose his life.
Did you mention 1 Corinthians 5 about the immorality?
That's what Lauren just mentioned.
I'm sorry, I missed.
That's what she just said.
So
that was her comment just 2 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
Edith Simmons? That is never mentioned. He loved her, so I don't know if they actually had a sexual relationship or not. But his, and this I have listed under a separate section, but the sexual relationship is something that God, that the devil has always used against God's people, and he would certainly be one of those because of his marriage to the first wife. He married a woman who is a Philistine, who was someone God said he should not marry, and it brought him great grief and his family great grief.
What about Jacob? I mean, he had two wives, and obviously he was not a wife. He had an extremely dysfunctional family.
Well, that is a, to me that goes again. God never calls it fornication. God allowed them to have more than one wife. There's a lot of things in the Old Testament I don't understand. Just yes, and the concubines. He actually had four women, two of which he married, and two of which he just slept with because his wives wanted more kids. And so that's an area that I'm not qualified to talk about.
You never see David's concubines because
well, David had multiple wives. I mean,
and
concubines. But and so this is something that under that system, I don't know why God allowed it. I don't know why God tolerated it, but He did. Yes, Abraham and Hagar. And so these are things that I don't understand. But we can look at some cases like the ones we've looked at. That I feel show that fornication affects other people. When it's just an out-and-out sin of fornication, it affects so many other people. Another thing that I put was Matthew 5:32 and Matthew 19:9. This is the only reason God gives to dissolve a marriage. And let's look at Matthew 19:9. Sandra, would you read that, please?
And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery. And whoever marries her who is divorced commits adultery.
Okay. Also, let's turn to Matthew 5:32. That was the one I meant to read, but anyway. Sandra, read that also.
But I say to you that whoever divorces his wife for any reason except sexual immorality causes her to commit adultery, and whoever marries a woman who is divorced commits adultery.
Okay. There's two people here that are involved. And in Matthew 5:32, who is guilty for both of them? I mean, the person who... How can I ask this? Okay, who are the two people that, if they remarry, are involved? The husband and the wife, right? And it says, what about the woman if she remarries? I know, but I mean, he causes her. He makes her commit adultery. There are desires that God placed in us that are intended to be fulfilled. And if, say, Stephen should decide, okay, I'm through with her, I'm just tired of her, I've not been unfaithful to him, but I've burned the biscuits too many times or whatever, and he divorces me, that puts me in a position that if I should ever go and seek this kind of companionship again of in a sexual relationship, I'm guilty of sin. I didn't want the divorce. I wanted no part of it, but he did that, and so it puts me in a position to fulfill that those desires and the relationship that God intended for me to have. I'm going to be doing it in sin. And so that's a pretty big effect that you have on somebody else. So so many times people are unhappy and they think, okay, there's been no adultery, but I can't live this way any longer. It's not just your soul you're playing fire with. It's their soul. It's your mate's soul as well, because they have those desires. They have that's God gave them that, and it's a righteous desire. And if they cannot control themselves for some reason, and they do decide to get married again, then it's your fault. Betty?
Also, the souls of the ones who married them.
Exactly right. So you can wind up with four people who are destined for an eternity with the devil in hell because of one person. And so many times, what does it boil down to? Really, in a marriage, when there's no adultery or no fornication been committed in a marriage, and I want a divorce.
Most of the time, not working properly together to fix those things that you're having problems with.
Okay. But the person that says, I'm doing this no matter what, I don't care. Selfishness. Yes. That is the most selfish thing you can do. And, of course, we all know that when there's a divorce, who is hurt the worst of all if there are any?
Children.
They're the ones who suffer the most. How many of those children, especially when they're young, wonder, what did I do? This must be my fault. I wasn't good enough. If I'd have been good enough, Mom and Daddy wouldn't have fussed all the time. And then it affects them in their attitude towards marriage as they grow older and become teenagers, and then they seek a wife and look for a wife. And it's very hard if your children are all married. Because especially if you're Christians and you're all trying to live right, and you have a parent who, I've rejected God, I'm not going to live for God, that hurts also. That's really hard to have a good family unit when you have one, and especially whether it's your mother or your father who has been the person who's guided you and tried to lead you, and they've always brought you back to God's Word. Well, now they're not. And so people are affected by our sin, and we need to be aware of that.
Children because of grandchildren.
That's right. Yes, that's right.
And that's why it's important for even those of us who maintain good marriages and teach our children to, as they grow, to teach them about this sin, so that, you know, prayerfully, when they start looking for a mate, they will look for one who has the same regard for God's word and the same regard for serving the Lord. And as a woman and daughters, to be in subjection to and still be able to serve the Lord, you know, to the best of their judgment, you know, when they're looking, instead of waiting until they fall in love and, you know, and this person is not going to be able to maybe have the same thoughts on this.
Okay. I had one other listed, and it was briefly mentioned. Let's look at Genesis chapter 19. Actually, look at 18:20. Sodom and Gomorrah, remember in our definition, homosexuality and lesbianism is listed in that. And so because of the rampant homosexuality in Sodom and Gomorrah, the whole two cities were destroyed. And it's interesting because in chapter 18, God is talking to Abraham, and he's deciding that he needs to tell Abraham what he's going to do because of who Abraham was and that what he was going to make of him. Jamie, would you read chapter 18, verse, let's see, we don't want to read all of this. Read verse 22, start read verse 18, no, 20, I'm going to get this right, and then 22, okay, read 18 and 22 of chapter 18.
It says, Abraham will surely become a great and mighty nation, and in him all the nations of the earth will be blessed. Then the men...
Read 20 and through verse 22.
And the Lord said, the outcry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great indeed, and their sin is exceedingly great. I will go down now and see if they have done entirely according to this outcry, which has come to me. And if not, I will know. Then the men turned away from there and went toward Sodom, while Abraham was still standing before the Lord.
Okay. So he's going to go down and destroy. God is going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah because of their wickedness. And we know what their wickedness was because if you continue on and read the rest of this chapter in chapter 19, we see that when they came, they wanted the angels. They didn't want the women. They wanted more men. The men wanted men. So we know that this was homosexuality. So what we need to remember is this kind of sin can destroy a nation. And that's why it's so important that we teach our children and that we not be afraid to stand up and say, homosexuality is a sin. It's wrong. It can destroy this nation. That's not the politically correct thing to do right now because the gay and lesbian movement is just rampant. And I don't know, I heard somebody say one time that the homosexual people haven't continued to increase. I don't know that there's any more today than there were back in the biblical times. There's always been this sin of homosexuality. You read about it from very early on here in Genesis. And so this is something that men have always devised and come up with. This certainly wasn't God's plan or God's idea. And so, and it could be the undoing of our nation, maybe not now, but in 100 years. I don't know what this nation's going to be because we're moving closer and closer to being like Sodom and Gomorrah in this nation because it's accepted, it's funny, it's on TV. That's one of the things that I think we need to be careful of as Christians, what we watch on television. Norman Lear, and I may have said this in class before, I don't remember, I don't know if y'all know who that is, he wrote Soap and All in the Family and Maud and several of those shows. I heard him in an interview one time and he said, if I can get people to laugh at something, then they become more accepting of it. It's not so bad. And he was the first one that put a homosexual character on a TV show. And so that, and then throughout a lot of the ones he wrote, there were characters on there that were homosexual and different things. And so if something becomes a joke to us, then it's not so bad. How can it be so bad if we're laughing about it? It's funny. And so we need to guard especially ourselves because how are we going... I hear parents sometimes say, I'm going to go to this movie. It's not fit for my kids to see. I'm going to have to find somebody to babysit. Or even their teenage years, I don't want my kids to see it, but I want to see this movie. Why do you want to see it if you don't want your children to see it? So we need to be careful about what we tell our kids sometimes, we teach our children sometimes more by what we do than what we tell them. Because they watch us and they think, oh, well, when I get her age, I can do that too. It will be all right. But fornication is a very, very serious sin that affects the people who commit it and the people all around them. And I mentioned this a little bit earlier, but Satan has used the sexual desire and sexual relationship outside of marriage to bring heartache to God and his people all through the scriptures. And we can see that. We saw that. We mentioned Abraham and Jacob. Abraham, he had two wives that brought all kinds of problems. Jacob, bless his heart, he had four women and he had misery all over the place. The intermarrying with other nations and Ezra caused God's people a lot of heartache because they had married people God said they couldn't have. So this was a sexual relationship that was not approved. And they had to put away their wives and their children. Balaam, that was the way that Balaam finally got what he wanted. He told Balak, okay, it's the sin of Peor, and evidently it was women, because that was why God said, you got to kill these women. This is what caused them to sin in the first place. And so that's in Numbers 31. So we can be very vulnerable in this area, and we need to remember it can happen to me. Not it can happen to my mate, it can happen to me. We all think we're immune. We're happy. We have a good marriage. We have a good relationship. And it's kind of like think of it as we got our vaccine. The vaccine doesn't always work. Even in the vaccine you give your kids, some people get it even though they get the vaccine, whatever you give them a vaccine for. So we need to really be aware of that and be on guard. Okay, anybody else have anything else before we move on from this point? Anybody, any other examples or verses they would like to look at? Okay, what did God command to be done under the old law to fornicators? Let's look at Deuteronomy 22. Susan, would you read verse 22 through 29, please?
If a man is found lying with a married woman, then both of them shall die, the man who lay with the woman and the woman. Thus you shall purge the evil from Israel. And if there is a girl who is a virgin engaged to a man, and another man finds her in the city and lies with her, then you shall bring them both out to the gate of that city, and you shall stone them to death. The girl, because she did not cry out in the city, and the man, because he has violated his neighbor's wife. Thus you shall purge the evil from among you. But if in the field the man finds the girl who is engaged, and the man forces her and lies with her, then only the man who lies with her shall die. But you shall do nothing to the girl. There is no sin in the girl worthy of death. For just as a man rises against his neighbor and hurts him, so is this case. When he found the field, the engaged woman cried out that there was no one to save her. If a man finds a girl who is a virgin, who is not engaged, and seizes her, and lies with her, and they are discovered, then the man who lay with her shall give to the girl's father 50 shekels of silver, and she shall become his wife because he has violated her. He cannot divorce her all his days.
Okay, what would happen to our population if we killed everybody that is talked about in these verses? We wouldn't have to worry about a lot of things, would we? And not just in this nation, all over the world. This is a sin that's rampant all over the world. And then when you hear of people who are raped, I think if rapists were eligible for the death penalty, that would stop a lot. The next one would think a lot about it before they did it again. I just saw on the news the other day a woman, I think it's been 6 or 8 years since he raped her, and she was in her 70s then. They finally caught the man who raped her, and with DNA evidence proved that it was him. And no telling how many women he's raped between. I mean, he's got a rap sheet this thick. You know, it just goes on and on and on. And so, but if the first time they did that, he was put to death, that would have stopped him. And how many more would it have stopped because they would think twice before they go out and do something like this? So this is a very odious sin to God, and something that he made the death penalty for, just like he did murder. And so to me, rape is the same as murder. But it's interesting that fornication was just as odious to him, and the penalty for that was death too. So when we think, oh, it's not that big of a deal, you know, we see people and they've been married a long time and they become Christians and they discover that they're living in adultery, it tears at our heartstrings. It's hard to think these people can't stay together. But that's not how God looks at things. God, at least he didn't, they don't have to be killed today. But we need to realize how serious this is. It was serious enough, and I found interesting in verse 28 and 29, he can't divorce her. You know, divorce was easy to come by in the Jewish nation, and God allowed that. It was not approved, but he allowed it. But in this case, if he had raped her, he could never get rid of her. So if somebody rapes somebody, they better think long and hard, especially if she's not engaged. This ain't going to be a one-night stand. It's found out, and you're going to have her the rest of your life. You better be sure you like her a lot, because God says you can't divorce her. Poor woman. Well, that's true, too. I feel sorry for her, but I bet she had some leverage in that relationship with the nation. I would think she would have. Maybe not.
God hated them so much that there was even a law of jealousy put in place for a man who thought that his wife was unclean, you know, and unchaste. And so that's in Numbers 5.
Mm-hmm.
And, there was a lot. You had to go to the priest, and she had to drink the stuff, and, you know, and to prove either she was guilty or not guilty.
Mm-hmm.
But then if she was not guilty, then she would be able to conceive, and the husband, you know, was to keep her and, you know, not put her away, and, you know, he just was jealous.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but if she were guilty, well, then she would not bear children, and she would waste away, and, you know, I don't know if they would, you know, put her to death.
Well, she should have been.
She would die.
There's some things in the Old Testament that I don't always understand that.
No.
If she committed fornication, and it's proven, everything else in the law says she should die. So I've read that, too, and I have no idea how all that would work out. Okay, the next question is, what specifically can we do to avoid this sin in our life? I think what we're going to do is we're going to wait, and we're going to discuss that part of the question after we've looked at the other two words, because so much of the answers are the same there. So unless someone just has something they want to share right now, we're going to go ahead and look at impurity or uncleanness. Let's look at Ephesians chapter 4. Look at some scriptures that has this in it before we go to the definition. Verse 17 through 19. Sheila can't read. Elizabeth, would you read that, please?
This I say, therefore, and testify in the Lord, that you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walk in the futility of their minds, having their understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God, because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their heart, who being past feeling have given themselves over to lewdness, to work all uncleanness with greediness.
Okay. So what does this say their state with God is?
They're not in a good relationship.
No. Their heart is darkened, or their understanding. They're darkened in their understanding. And excluded from the life of God is how mine put it. How did yours put it there?
Alienated.
I wouldn't want to be alienated from God. And that when you have this life of impurity, which is sexual impurity, as we're going to see when we get to the definitions, and it's interesting that this is in a contrast again. So many times you find these two ways of life contrasted in the scriptures. And this, I believe, is another case of where it's contrasted, because in chapter 4, verse 1, he's imploring them to walk in a manner worthy of the calling with which they have been called. And then in verse 17, he tells them to walk no longer as the Gentiles walk. But then, chapter 5, verse 1, he says walk in love. And then chapter 5, verse 8, walk as children of light. Verse 15 of chapter 5, walk not as unwise, but wise. And so there's a contrast here of how we are to live. We have a choice. Here again, the Ephesians have a choice. They can either to walk in a manner worthy, or they can walk in a manner that they're darkened and alienated. And so they had a choice to make. Let's look at Colossians 3:5.
We're turning there in the passage in Ephesians, it says that their will, you know, they have set their will again, and they become callous. You know, we don't want to think that if we do these things that we are against God. But doing those things over a period of time, we can become callous. I mean, you know, and we can fall prey to that, not just, you know, these people.
And in this sin specifically, we've all known people who that's what happened to them. They fell into this specific sin, fornication, and were not willing to give it up. And we're willing to walk off and leave everything precious to them. Mothers and fathers, spouses, children, whatever it costs.
They think that there's nothing wrong with it.
Mm. Well, they know when they get started that they become, like you say, they become calloused. It hurts at first, but then the longer we do something, the less it hurts. It's kind of like your conscience can become seared. We can tell our conscience it's okay, or ignore our conscience and continue on into where our conscience doesn't even hurt anymore. We're so ingrained in what we're doing. Okay, Ephesians 3:5. Betty, would you read that, please?
Colossians
3:5. Yes, I'm sorry.
Therefore, consider the members of your earthly bodies as dead to immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, which amounts to idolatry.
Okay. So here, we are to not participate in these things. We are to, consider yourselves as dead to. There's not even to be a thought of this. This is something, when something's dead, there's no life in it. There's no, so we need to realize we're dead to that. We cannot participate in that. It has to be something that is totally, we are to totally abstain from. Okay, on the definition, anybody have a definition they want to share? Of uncleanness. Okay.
God says defiled.
Okay.
The dictionary says dirty, morally impure, vile, or unchaste.
Okay.
Also used Romans 1, you know, where it's talking about God giving them over to their uncleanness, the lust of their hearts, and honor to dishonoring their bodies. And that's in verse 24, and then in verse 26 and 28, when it again says he gave them over, it says to vile passions and to debased minds. Mm-hmm.
Let's turn over to Romans. That was Lauren, go ahead and read verse 24 through 28.
Therefore, God also gave them up to uncleanness and the lust of their heart to dishonor their bodies among themselves, who exchanged the truth of God for the lie and worshiped and served the creature rather than the Creator who lives forever. Amen. For this reason, God gave them up to vile passions, for even their women exchanged the natural use for what is against nature. Likewise, also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust for one another, men with men committing what is shameful and receiving in themselves the penalty of their error, which was due. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things which are not good.
Okay.
Oh, one more. Being filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness.
Go ahead. That's good. That's fine.
Maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness. They are whisperers.
And it just goes on and on from there.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I wanted to read that whole thing is because what is listed in here that we've been talking about that is, we've talked about it under fornication, and that's also under uncleanness.
Mm-hmm.
homosexuality and lesbianism, the men with men, women with women. So here again, it just lays layers, because there are people who have felt in the past that it was not a woman could not divorce her husband if he was having an affair with another man, that it was not fornication. But I think here it's listed under uncleanness. We've seen it in the passages that we've looked at where it's talked about fornication. It's listed as fornication. These two words are very close together. Lauren?
Did you just say some people, some Christians believe that a woman can't
divorce? In years past, I've heard of people say that they did not feel that would be, because the deal with fornication is the way it's defined. It's always been an act. And so they said that was not, there was no way for, of course, I know there is, but we're not getting that in all this stuff. we're not here for a sex education class.
Imagine somebody not thinking of that.
Well, and they say, okay, women with women. How can women with women, how can they have a physical sexual relationship like a man and woman does? It's physically impossible, they say. And so I don't know that that's so much of a problem anymore, but it could be, if you know, was in someone's mind. You never know where somebody's thinking is going to come from. But remember these passages, and especially the ones where it's lumped in with fornication. And so, but I'm like you. I don't understand all that. But anyway, another thing we're going to see, the next word we're going to look at is sensuality or lasciviousness. And these two words, fornication, uncleanness, and lasciviousness, a lot of times are grouped together. It is here in Galatians 5:19. Look also at 2 Corinthians 12:21.
You know, there's one of the things I put in the definition, Pat, was that the things that Lauren said and the impure thoughts and actions that lead or promote fornication, you know, in the context, mm-hmm. it's our grouped together, like you're saying, you know. But it's all those impure things, you know, that lead up to fornication.
Okay. 12:21. Deanna, would you read that, please? 2 Corinthians 12:21.
Lest when I come again, my God will only inform you, and I shall mourn for many who have sinned before and have not repented of the uncleanness, fornication, and wickedness which they have practiced.
Okay. So all of these are lumped together. They are things that promote one another and ultimately result in fornication. One definition I found was morally wrong, especially in sex and sexual matters. And, you know, there's more to sexual matters than fornication. There's a lot of things that lead up to. And that's one of the things when we get to our what specifically can we do to avoid in our lives. There's a lot of things we can, if we have set standards, we won't reach the temptation of fornication, because it's kind of like nipping something in the bud, you know. Somebody makes a pass at you and it makes you feel good. Well, don't let it make you feel so good. Realize that that's Satan's way of getting his foot in the door. Anybody else have a definition that they would like to share? Okay.
So the Pharisees were trying to get Jesus to say that the disciples didn't wash their hands. And so he talked a lot about defilement, and he mentioned a while ago coming from the heart. And Jesus talked about things that come from the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And he, at the end he said, not washing your hand is not what defiles a man. Of course, in there he's talking about how they didn't take care of their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, what defiles a man is what comes out of the mouth and what comes from the heart.
Mm-hmm. That's right. They had that all mixed up. They had all these things they weren't supposed to eat and with unwashed hands because they'd make you unclean. They did not realize that the uncleanness was an unclean heart. And that is so scary for us, because those are things we need to be very careful to guard against. Because so many times we don't think about it. We don't think about it as being a sin or a temptation. It's something that kind of maybe is flattering or is funny and those kind of things. So we need to be careful. What we put in our heart is what's going to eventually come back out. We only have about 3 or 4 minutes before I really like to stop at a quarter till, because I want to encourage more parents to bring their kids, and I want them to be able to say, oh, we don't go but about 45 minutes. And so does anybody else, is there anything that we would like to add to the class before we reach that? Lauren?
You're still to cover since you're
out. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And we can do that today if y'all want to stay another 10 minutes. Or we can, but anyway, I think, because lasciviousness is, I have quite a bit on that, and I would really like to spend a little time on that. So that is really a lot of where the extracurricular things, if we're not careful, come in. And so,
on D, where it says, what specifically can we do to avoid this one in our lives?
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about, like, don't be around temptation, but what else could you say?
Okay. What we're going to do is we're going to deal with all of those. We're dealing with all three of these words. We're going to answer that question at the end. Will that be okay? After I did the lesson, I wished I would have. I put that on each word, and then as I started writing out my things, they kind of all mesh together and go together. So I thought maybe it'd be best if we just talked about them all at one time. That's that. Okay. Does anybody know, Betty?
I just wanted to say that one of the definitions that I got is, which to me goes in with all of, is devoted to the pleasures of the senses.
Where'd you find that?
I think it was in like a Webster's type dictionary. But anyway, it said lewd, and then it said that, and I just thought, you know, that's kind of what.
Okay, now which is that?
About.
Is that on impurity or lasciviousness?
Oh, lasciviousness.
Okay.
And I found lewd also, you know, with the
yeah.
impurity.
Okay. Well, we'll deal with those under lasciviousness come next week.